Welcome to Transition, Gadget 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about some things esports, some things games festivals in India. So the primary protagonist in this one is DreamHack, which is an expo that Rishi attended in Mumbai some time ago. So he'll be talking about all the things he saw there and all the things he shouldn't have seen there either. And then we'll be talking about some historical perspective on what happens at gaming expos in India, which usually involves a lot of disasters, but well, just, you know, sit back, relax and enjoy the ride. Rishi Alwani, the games editor, is here.
Hey guys, and we also have friend of the podcast, Mikhail Badnani.
Yes, and this is the last episode of the year,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, this is our, I think, episode number 103 and our final episode of 2018. As much as I hate to say it, see you guys next year.
Alright, so Pranay Parab, I'm your host right here. So Rishi, you went to DreamHack, you saw some interesting things. Let's start with the juicy details first.
So, okay, so before we actually get into the meat and bones of the story, DreamHack is an international gaming festival with events usually in Europe and the US. And it's so ingrained into at least European culture, like places in Sweden. If DreamHack's usually where kids at the age of 14, 15 build and bring their first PC. It's kind of like a social event as well. So there are LAN parties, there are unofficial tournaments, there are official tournaments, there is a retro zone for consoles, for older consoles. And there's a lot of, it's basically a very chill event. And the first outing of DreamHack in Asia happened to me in Mumbai. And it was over this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of the weekend that just got over. So I was there to check out what went down. Now, usually, I was a little curious simply because 2 weeks prior to DreamHack, Book My Show had ads all over the place showing off this really interesting event with really cool production values. And obviously, me being cynical would be like, yeah, I mean, that's how it is internationally. What will happen in India? So turns out, the production values were there, but everything else was a bit amiss. So on day one, what we noticed was for starters, there was basically Nintendo ROM piracy at the retro booth, which is the first thing you see when you enter.
All right, that's a great start.
Yeah, so it was amusing, right? Because it's a retro booth which they say is for the community and stuff like that. But then at the end of the day, what I find amusing is you're charging people to enter DreamHack. So on paper, the DreamHack ticket prices are $499 to $1499. $499 to $15,000, sorry. Depending
so
on
what,
which...
what does $15,000 get you?
$15,000 gets you the epic, super legendary BYOC tier where you get this really cool kick-ass gaming PC and you can even sit there and, you can get food and basically chill. That's the whole thing. But the PCs weren't that great. I was chilling with a couple of people who had those passes, and those PCs were running ancient NVIDIA 6300 GTs, which meant they could barely run any games. Even though they had 8 gigs of RAM.
Because they're on Excitebike though.
Oh yeah. So speaking of Excitebike, yeah. So $499 actually gets you inside, and $15,000 gives you the whole quote unquote DreamHack experience. Now as for Mike bringing up Excitebike, yeah. So the Retro Zone had Nintendo ROMs, like Excitebike, which is everything right down to the menus was 1:1, probably with the exception of the fact that while the OG cartridge of Excitebike has the Nintendo copyright. Now that was obviously missing here, and they were all running off menus that had that were titled 76001. So you can tell that's definitely not legitimate.
Yep.
So when we say not legitimate, basically emulators themselves are legal. If you own the actual cartridge and you use hardware or like the original hardware to dump the ROM and play it, that apparently is legal in some places, not legal in other places. Mm. But I don't see a situation in which something called 76001.
Yeah.
Like no one has 76,000 cartridges which they've dumped.
And the response from Nodwin, who's the events organizer, was basically along the lines of Creative Commons and open internet, and this is all games whose licenses have been expired and we're not using it for commercial purposes. That's fine to say. Fact of the matter is you have charged people entry for the event, and you were giving out a prize pool of like 5,000 rupees an hour for whoever had the high score on these leaderboards of some of these games. So that's definitely off. Apparently, according to people at the event who had spoken to, a lot of the organizers, a lot of attendees off record, who long-time attendees of a lot of Nordwin's events, what they had told me is that this is a standard feature at even events they do at Comic-Con. And it just so happens that because the placement of this was right in front and not at some decrepit corner, it was easy for people to spot. So they're like, so that was one part of it, which is really weird that they thought this would be a good idea. And what's really depressing about this in particular is that the alleged budget on DreamHack, I use alleged because this is what multiple sources have said, but I couldn't verify them, even though there are multiple people who told me this, was that was in a range of around, I think, 6 to 8 crore was what I heard the budget of DreamHack was. So even if your budget wasn't that much, all right, even if it was less, even if it was more, my point is, if you have a budget to play with, for the love of God, why are you pirating? All right. And it's not a situation of, I mean, at the end of the day, this isn't like Pranay and Rishi's LAN party. This is DreamHack. This is like India's stab at legitimacy. There's a reason why most game publishers, most game companies don't take India seriously. And that's because the audience is thought to be people who don't give a crap about content. Now, it's one thing when the audience doesn't care about content. I mean, it's something Mike and I joke about on a daily basis, right? People spend 70,000-80,000 rupees on a high-end Android phone or an iPhone. We'll try to find a way to get apps for... We'll try to pirate apps or,
I mean,
jailbreak.
We went through this when WhatsApp was... Remember when WhatsApp used to be $1 on the app? So, I used to make fun of people who buy like the newest iPhone and then they're like, how do I get WhatsApp for free and all?
Yeah.
So people exist. But the thing is, you know... I see the, at least, like, I don't see it directly, but I know a lot of people say that, you know, if you can't buy these games directly and there's no way to support the publisher directly, that they are ethically okay with it, even though it's still piracy. But the fact is, like, games like Excitebike, they're still, you can still buy them. It's still available on the Wii U. You can buy it through Virtual Console, as far as I'm aware. Wii U's are not, like, you can still buy Wii U's. Yeah. There'll be tons of them available easily. Or even if you want to have a retro zone, like, Nintendo Switch has, like, 30 NES games with online play and all available now. And there were Switches at the event, right? For the Smash tournament.
Yeah. And the other thing is that while it might seem like we're nitpicking here, you have to understand the international DreamHack events actually have retro hardware. So you're trying to tell me that audiences in Europe and US can get access to legitimate content and hardware while India has to make do with pirated stuff. That's just wrong on so many levels. And that seems to be the situation here. And that's just one part of the drama that went down at DreamHack. That's the first thing we saw. Secondly, is that a lot of the casters, a lot of the talent. So you now see there are like a bunch of components to DreamHack, right? One is the casual retro stuff. The other is the fighting game community stuff. And there's obviously big tier esports like PUBG Mobile, like CSGO and like Dota 2. Now, for those events, like CSGO and Dota 2, you need casters and analysts. You need people to commentate on the game, break down what's going on. Now, there's some really good Indian casters in the scene for that, and there are also some really good international ones. They managed to call a few international ones down, like Sterna. But what had happened was, and this is something which is a common theme across Indian casters, was that, the international talent got put up at proper hotels, 3-4-star hotels, along with you know, a ride to the venue back and forth. But the Indian talent was put up at what could be best described as dilapidated conditions and not exactly what you'd call a quote-unquote habitable rooms. Let's just say they were far from legitimate in a lot of ways. And it was pretty messed up from that point of view. And I found that really amusing. Because, again, it makes you wonder, right? Like, if you're doing something like DreamHack, at least treat the people who are trying to make it a decent show with some respect. Evidently, that didn't extend to the Indian contingent of talent that showed up. Then on top of that, there was even infrastructural issues through the day. So every tournament was running late, with the exception of FGC. Because all the fighting game community stuff was basically local, right? One is and with the exception of FIFA, because again, FIFA, it's versus on the same console. Everything else was running late. So on day one, the Counter-Strike event was supposed to happen at noon. It only began at midnight. There's a full 12-hour delay.
Why?
And there's more to it. Dota 2 also was delayed just as much, if not more so. There were supposed to be qualifiers for Mobile Legends, which is a kind of Dota 2 ripoff for mobile, which got pushed back to the next day, 7 a.m. PUBG Mobile, where you're supposed to win 20,000 rupees an hour, barely got like 4-5 hours running on the first day. Now, the reason for all of this was that from what I have heard, again, I don't know how true this is that there weren't proper checks done on internet speeds. There weren't any speed tests run. There wasn't any, proper vetting and checks and how all that would have worked. And it reached a point where even on LAN with CSGO, which does it, which isn't internet dependent, there was a situation where even on LAN, you'd get like 100 ping and like 30% packet loss. To give you an idea of how bad that is, that's the kind of ping I get when I used to play Team Fortress 2 back in 2008, connecting to a Singapore Valve server. So it was really not a good experience from the esports pro player side of things. So a lot of events were running late, and they managed to finish it, but then how much of the prize pool? So the thing is, the DreamHack India had a 1 crore prize pool. I don't know how much actually went or was actually distributed at the end of it, considering how late everything was run. So there's no clarity on that. And what makes matters even more disturbing is aside from issues with the internet, is that there were issues even with networking, like we said with CSGO, right? Where you don't need gigabit internet to play CSGO. You could have done it on LAN properly. They didn't manage that. There were even issues with the teams. It reached a point where things were so behind schedule on day one that Indian teams like Brutality, who took up a pretty huge space at the BYOC section, they decided not to come in on day two and participate. They showed up for whatever contractual sponsorship obligations they had on day two, but they didn't participate. It even reached a situation where you had teams like, I think, Signify, whose management was a little salty about how things were running late. They even were quite vocal about it. So it was pretty, on the surface, while it looked like a really nice event and the production values were pretty cool, there's a lot bubbling underneath which I felt could have been done better. And it's not like this is Nodwin's first event. They've done ESL tournaments before. In fact, their last Mumbai event ran so much on schedule that it ended early. So they were supposed, the Mumbai event was supposed to end at 9, they ended at 8:15. Everyone was done by 8:45 and they packed up and were done by 12. Speaking of the pack up, and actually setting up for that matter, so apparently, again, a couple of people from the organization side of things who I'd spoken to off record claimed that they had the location 3 days prior to the start of the event. So while the event was supposed to start on Friday, they had it on Wednesday, around Tuesday, Wednesday. But no setup actually happened till Thursday night. And even then, it's like two people per stall. So if FGC had like 8 people to set up switches and everything, only 2 people could go in. And apparently, again, I don't know how true this is, but then the word on this, the common refrain from a lot of people was, the reason for this is that they didn't want to pay for the internet on days prior to the event. So there's no proper testing done. Nothing happened. And in terms of a crowd, it was interesting because the numbers I had heard from some people ranged from like 400 all the way up to 5,700, at least for the first 2 days. And I'm more likely to believe it's closer to 400 than 5,700 because there are a lot of empty spaces. And if you looked at the BYOC turnout, right, bring your own computer turnout where you show up with your own PC, apparently the sum total tickets sold, now I don't know how many of them were sold or distributed or given away, was 283. And to make matters even more amusing, when the ticket prices were announced, there were people who bought them at full price. Only you see ticket prices drop to the point where $499 tickets were $99. And it was a pretty messed up affair. So there have been a lot of angry people on the DreamHack India Facebook page saying, I paid full price, will I get a refund? What's going on? So, that's the other part of it. Like, it was poorly mismanaged from a ticketing aspect. And what made matters even worse was that if you bought a foundation pass for Comic-Con, you could enter for free. But no one knew that. No one knew that. It wasn't mentioned anywhere. And what I saw, at least, was the food court was, if you actually bought anything from the food court, which is adjacent to NESCO, adjacent to this specific hall of NESCO, Hall 4, you could essentially get free entry into DreamHack by showing your receipt. So it was pretty clear that the turnout wasn't what was expected. And it wasn't as big as most would have seemed to be. Fine. I get it. It's tough to get people in for a paying event. But if I go back to, and this is the same thing we had asked Nodwin when they announced DreamHack back on September 27, I think, where we asked them, is India ready for a paying event? And the answer I got was a very amusing, India's ready for a paying event where the new, Comic-Con's proved it, and where the gaming is a new pop culture sensation. Wow. Now, I mean, I don't know what to say, man. I mean, if you're that confident, I would have thought you guys would have made a better push for the sale, but evidently that did not happen. So it was just a weird scene. And I mean, all in all, it was just in the whole, I mean, I just think this is some grand litmus test to see if people would pay to enter events here. And frankly, I don't think people got value. There were a lot of people who bought the 15,000 rupee seats who had chairs that were worse than those who bought the entry level seats. So it is a messy scene from that standpoint. And where does this all tie back to? This all ties back to the fact that you can't have an event like this and expect publishers, game studios, the esports scene to take India seriously when this happens. And that's the big problem.
Hmm.
And I mean, it was really funny, right? Because the only section I was running on time was FGC. And FGC was completely community run. It had no Nordwind just gave them the space. Nordwind didn't even promote what was going on there. So they had a Super Smash Brothers tournament, they had a Tekken tournament, they had a Street Fighter 5 tournament, and all of them were pretty cool. In fact, the Street Fighter 5 one was interesting because the winner was a kid fresh out of high school in West Bengal who just emerged in the scene last year, called Ayan Biswas, who won the Mountain Dew Arena and just, you know, just showed up and beat the pants out of, you know, guys who've been in the scene for a while like Dingo and Shadowkin. So it's pretty interesting. And the worst part is, most of the FGC matches were really nice to the point where you could actually, you know, they're super tense matches where it reached a point where the life bars could be measured in pixels as to how close they got. But none of them were broadcast because it was all on Voot, right? So they had to pick and choose which matches to go on. And Voot's, and most of the time, a lot of the good FGC stuff wasn't viewable. So you had to actually be there to see it, which is kind of sucky. And it is odd because Voot was their official streaming partner, which meant there was nothing on Twitch, there's nothing on YouTube, and which meant if you're watching it on Voot, you had to watch at 480p 30fps, which is, I mean, come on, man, you can't broadcast an esports event or any kind of gaming event with that tech. It's just wrong. So it was pretty sad that way, even though the tournament happened on time and the FGC crowd was surprisingly chilled out, very cool to talk to, and they actually knew what they were doing. But yeah, it was a bit disappointing to see that as well. I mean, on the whole, all of this is funny because it ties back into something called the Indian Gaming Carnival that happened like back in 2011, 2012, where it ended up with a scam where a team like Moscow 5 essentially got scammed and robbed as well. And it was funny because at the media roundtable, the Nordwind CEO, Akshat Rathi, was like, this is my redemption of the Indian Games Carnival. And, you know, I was there when that happened and this is my redemption of it. I mean, I don't know if it's more of a redemption, but it's like kind of like you're still on the road to redemption because you're not there yet. But yeah, there's a lot of things and not all of it was as good as some of the pictures or press may lead you to believe.
Okay then, so maybe we want to equate some of these events to what happened at an earlier gaming expo in India. It was called the India Games Carnival all the way back in 2012 in some back of beyond sector in Greater Noida, far as I remember that. I remember following that event and I was about to go attend it at that time. I used to work for a different company then, but at the last minute, I think there was some cab issue and I couldn't go. And then like throughout the day, I was following tweets and one after the other, we had people saying that there's nothing here, nothing has been arranged properly, half the like stalls are empty, not even enough computers. The teams that showed up, they didn't have the greatest of experiences and there were some international teams as well, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it was really weird, right? Because at that time also, it was a complete fiasco. From a lot of people claim it was just massively a big scam. And here, obviously, it doesn't seem like a scam. It just seems like they could have done it better. And it's questionable why they couldn't do it better because they've done events like this in the past. This isn't Nordwind's first event. And I mean, like, there are also some other interesting things. Like, you actually had casters move, one caster going around with a bouncer because, threats were made to him. And that apparently is a thing in the CSGO community, which seems to be more toxic than Britney Spears at this stage. But that was going on as well. But then by and large, I mean, it wasn't as bad as the Indian Games Carnival, but it wasn't like something that actually could give people a reason to show up. You know, there wasn't like any real tangible reason for a crowd to show up. But so far, that seems to be. And if I look at what happened on Reddit, right, the day the event got over, there was at least on r/CSGO, there was a post that was like, There's no stream from the event. Nordwin says that the net is down. They're streaming only on Voot, and you'd rather use a potato instead. Their paid media house couldn't even post the updates for the event. There was no updates on BYOC brackets, no stream for BYOC playoffs. Now, that's interesting because a lot of the BYOC quote-unquote tournaments never happened. They were advertised, but never happened. So, the Overwatch, Artifact, and I think Overwatch and Artifact at least come to mind, there were supposed to be community tournaments for that. Those never happened at all. And what was funny is that a Fortnite tournament did happen, but how they calculated it was super, super weird. They calculated the winner by, it was all duos, and the one with the most number of kills wins. Not, Victory Royale, but the guy with the most number of kills wins.
So back to Counter-Strike then.
And it was worse than that. It got worse than that. It got worse than that. Apparently, Nordwin claimed that that was a community event. But fine, you're saying it's a community event. Then why are you the guys handling the Discord and the servers? I mean, the Discord server for that. That makes no sense to me. And it was just weird, man. And there was no separate closed qualifier or invite for Indian teams. So Indian teams had to just go in and play against. There was no structure to that part of things as well. It was just a weird, weird scene. So yeah, DreamHack India. Not exactly Indian Games Carnival. Not even close, but not even what it should have been.
Yeah, definitely not as well organized as Comic-Con was, at least on day
one. Yeah,
that's definitely another ball game altogether.
Yep.
Okay then, so the games we've been looking forward to in 2019. Now,
well, the games we are looking forward to.
Yeah. So
unless you've been looking forward to something and some new footage has made you not look forward to it, like Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yes.
really now, Mike?
Yeah.
Really?
Apparently, that was old news. So, yeah, more people need to know about this because...
This seemed to be... Okay, so for those of you who are unaware, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is basically an action-adventure game, sequel to the critically acclaimed Beyond Good and Evil, which everyone has wanted a sequel to
for almost 10 years. What platforms is Beyond Good and Evil 1, or what did it release on initially before getting ports everywhere?
So, Beyond Good and Evil 1 released on GameCube, PS2, original Xbox, and PC. And it got a port to the Xbox 360, playable via backwards compatibility. And it even got a PC release. I think there was a PC release as well. I could be wrong there. Fact of the matter is, it's one of the more loved action-adventure games. Now, Beyond Good and Evil 2 doesn't have platforms. No one knows what it's coming out on. No one knows the release date.
Retailers are taking pre-orders for Xbox and PS4. So you can safely assume that it'll be on those two and PC.
You could. But then...
there's not more. Remember there were rumors at one point about it being Switch exclusive or something?
Yes.
And then we saw the first reveal at E3 or I believe before that.
This is not like
we didn't even think it would show up on current gen given what they showed.
So the whole thing was the creator of Beyond Good and Evil is Michel Ancel, the same guy who made Rayman. So there's a lot of talent around this game. There's a lot of hype around this game. But what's interesting is a year ago when they had the first developer stream for Beyond Good and Evil 2, Michel Ancel very, very clearly said that the game is offline. You can play it offline. And the online component is just an additional layer to bother with. It's not core to the game. Well, a year later...
A few days earlier, as of this recording, it was confirmed that they had a dev live stream called the... What is it? Some monkey something.
Space Monkey Patrol.
Space Monkey, yeah, something like that. Yeah. And where they answered a few questions from the community. And while... they obviously didn't say anything about a release window yet. Someone asked whether it can be played offline or whether it is online only. And it was confirmed that yes, it is online only for a shared world experience.
Yeah, with consistent updates. TLDR, they're building a hipster version of Destiny or Destiny 2. And the reason why we're telling you guys this is if you're expecting this to be an offline single player experience, it's not the case. And we would highly recommend you keep that in mind before making your purchasing decision.
Let's see when it even actually is announced for platforms and a release.
Yeah, but forget all that. You know what? I've pledged to avoid all Ubisoft games that are in this games as a service nonsense model.
So basically everything, because even Assassin's Creed Odyssey is technically games as a service with their post-launch content.
Yeah,
and
to me, it just seems like this could be them testing the waters to see how far they can go.
Yeah, I don't support this. I really want single-player games because, I want to play on my own with story-driven experiences, not this nonsense.
Sounds like you should buy a PS4.
He has.
Yeah.
So the Ubisoft game thing, even the Crew 2, really didn't like all the nonsense online.
See, that's
things
what, that's, like, I'll bring this up again. Forza Horizon does that very well, where if you want to play solo, you can play solo because they'll create AI components of your friends in your game. So it'll still give you sort of the same experience, but you can still play solo. I'm pretty sure that the next Forza Horizon game will probably be online only, like just given how much they're trying to push. But like Horizon 4 is really, really good. I mean, all of us love it. So yeah, like they still have that. Thankfully, they've not pulled a Forza Motorsport 7 on that yet.
Yeah.
So Beyond Good and Evil 2, like I was never looking forward to it, but yeah, like...
Yeah, but one game you were looking forward to, Mike, was Dragon Quest XI on Switch.
Oh, I still am looking forward to that. I have that game on 3DS, the Japanese one, and I loved it on PS4. We'll definitely buy it on Switch, even if it runs at 360p, doesn't matter. It's a fantastic game, so yeah, gonna get that. But like, no, Etrian Odyssey Nexus in February on 3DS, dude, the final Etrian Odyssey 3DS experience is going to be great. Looking forward to that for sure. And DMC5. So, I don't know anyone who isn't looking forward to DMC5.
Why
maybe
not
Ninja
BMC?
Theory.
Oh, snap. Yeah, so, DMC5 seems interesting. Though I'm actually looking forward to Resident Evil 2 Remake more. Because I'm very interested to see how they've adapted what most people claim to be the best, one of the best horror games of all time, onto modern gen. So I'm interested to see that. DMC seems interesting as well. Definitely looking at those two. And surprisingly, yeah, Metro Exodus. That should have an Indian distributor soon, because I don't think it would be listed on Games A Shop, which is a games retailer owned by a distributor called Express.
Isn't it that PlayStation card selling place?
That too. Yeah. So I'm looking for a Metro Exodus. Love the first two games. Looking forward to this for that one. And I'm curious to see, not exactly looking forward to, but I'm curious to see how Crackdown 3 turns out. Because I was there at Gamescom when they talked up Power of the Cloud like 4 years back.
You really think that's going to turn up in 2019?
It's going to release for sure. Whether it releases in a part where some of it comes later remains to be seen. But it's not going to get delayed more than that for sure. I think it's been delayed enough now.
Yeah. None of you looking forward to Kingdom Hearts 3?
I'm looking forward to, I think all of us are looking forward to playing it. When we play it, though, remains to be seen. But it's definitely going to be interesting seeing that.
So, Kingdom Hearts is an interesting one. And yeah, one part of the fun is to see how early the street date break is. There's no denying that. Because that happened with Final Fantasy 15, that happened with Final Fantasy 12, that's happened with a ton of Square Enix games, you know. Even Shadow Tomb Raider and Just Cause were leaked early. But to me, what's going to be interesting is to see how Square Enix manages to make it accessible for an audience who's never played the past games. Because there are, I think, 7-8 games to play.
Yeah, I mean, you need to play basically 1.5 plus 2.5 plus 2.8 to enjoy 3.
Yeah, at least you have to play at least 3 games before getting into this.
Or like three disc compilations of different games, which released across PS2, 3DS, DS, iOS. There's a mobile game story which they've compressed into this thing, and like a demo and all. And all of these are, as of now, they're exclusive to PS4 or PS3 basically. And like on Xbox, there's nothing. Now, I still think they're going to port those to Xbox eventually, because they even brought FF10, or they're bringing FF10 and 12 to Switch and Xbox. And these were PS2 originals, where apparently Sony marketed, or there was some stuff where they used
tech.
There
was more than marketing.
Yeah, so there was a gray area at the time where people didn't think these games would go to another console. They went to PC, but no one thought they'd show up on another console. And they are now, at least in 2019. So I still think the Kingdom Hearts collections will show up there. But Kingdom Hearts 3 is like the first one on Unreal Engine 4. And Unreal Engine 4 basically saving Square Enix's like big budget games in Japan, at least, because Dragon Quest XI, really good use of Unreal Engine 4. Kingdom Hearts 3 as well is using it, and I think they're using it for another game as well.
Yeah, so
they're using it for FF7 remake.
Yeah, FF7 remake. We don't
FF7
know about that
remake
game.
Will probably be like the bonus disc for Beyond Good and Evil 2, which has a code for the PC version of Red Dead Redemption. So yeah
playable at DreamHack 2018.
Yeah. Oh my god. That went to strange places.
The salt is strong, son.
Yeah.
No, but jokes aside, now in terms of coming back to accessibility for a moment there, Tetsuya Nomura, who's the games director, longtime director of most of the games, has even said straight up that, play at least the first two games before coming into this.
Yeah, that's actually a bit sad, because what Yakuza 6 did really well was, you know, put a flashback right up front.
Oh, so there will be, they will definitely have... like a summary for the people who aren't interested in playing. Obviously, that's not going to be as good as playing it, but they're definitely going to do something like that. Whether it's in the form of a video or whether it's in the form of text remains to be seen. But I cannot imagine a situation in which Kingdom Hearts 3 ships on Xbox without a summary for the previous games. Because this isn't like Final Fantasy 15, which is like a separate thing altogether. Although there was like a movie and all that random media thing they tried creating for it. So I don't think they're going to ship Kingdom Hearts 3 without having that. Now, Kingdom Hearts 3 does ship without the epilogue, apparently, because the game did leak in North Carolina. I think NC stands for North Carolina in the US, where 30 copies were stolen. And apparently someone uploaded the main menu and some footage and all. And it was confirmed that the secret ending or the secret movie and the epilogue will be added later on. To avoid leaks and all, and how this is managed for reviewers who like probably will get the copy, will get their official review copy of the game in the next week. I think early January, because the game is releasing towards the end of January. So I'm sure something like that is going to happen. But Kingdom Hearts 3, definitely interesting because it's Square Enix's first big release of 2019. So
I am looking forward to finishing all 2017 games in 2019.
You're forgetting one thing. Continue, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, are any Yakuza games coming out in 2019? Because, you know, now we have Yakuza 3, 4, and 5 missing, right?
There's more. Yeah. Have you heard of Judge Eyes, aka Project Judge?
No, it's Judgment now, without an E.
What?
Yeah, that's the new name. Project Judge in Japan, or Judge Eyes in Japan, which was temporarily titled Project Judge in the West, is now called Judgment.
Is it like, you know, that song from Yakuza, which I like
better than that?
Okay,
it's like, it's built in the Yakuza engine, over the top, very over the top action,
like Yakuza 6 and Kiwami 2 engine,
over the top action. And it we've seen some footage. It looks good.
You can play a demo really if you have a Japanese PSN account. It's a PS4 demo.
Yep.
The game, as of now, is coming just to PS4 in summer 2019. It'll have an English dub and Japanese dub options. And also, for the first time, apparently, they're doing different subtitle tracks. So if you're playing it, they'll adjust the subtitle tracks for the dialogue depending on which language you play and all, which is very interesting. The demo is a lot of fun and stuff like that. Looking forward to seeing how that happens. They probably will... I don't know why they haven't announced it yet, but Yakuza 3 and 4, the remasters, released on PS4 in Japan. 5 is coming out in Japan in the next few months. So those three have to show up on PS4
in English-speaking
regions. But you need to play Yakuza Kiwami 2. You need to play Yakuza 6. You need to play a lot of things, Pranay.
Like, yeah, but then if you're worried about new Yakuza games, we're going to get new and old ones. So I wouldn't worry too much. And I'd say keep a lookout for Judgment. It looks pretty cool.
All right, I'll go check that out for sure. On the mobile scene, there's no like real clarity on what's coming.
We'll get
a
new PUBG mobile map. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, but
I mean, like, that's not a new release though. That whatever.
You don't understand. The map makes the whole game better.
I'm sure it does.
Like, but jokes aside, Vikendi is a really good map.
PUBG mobile in general is really, really good. I mean, when it came out, I thought like, you know, no one's gonna bother with this with Fortnite, but it's actually the opposite. Where like, I've seen a lot of people just lose interest in Fortnite on iOS, and on Android, I haven't even heard of anyone playing it because it's not on Google Play or whatever.
Yep.
So, 2019, Epic wants to bring the game store to iOS. Let's see how that works out.
It'll
probably show up when Steam Link gets approved by Apple or something.
Yeah, that's like the two seals of the apocalypse broken. The third seal is when you actually have cross-platform play working across all games for all three platform holders.
So, yeah. But are you not looking forward to buying a Switch next year, Pranay?
No. Just a short answer. But yeah, if Nintendo Switch Pro is out, then I might be interested.
I mean, I'd be only interested if they bring back the actual eShop music.
Okay.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Okay then. So no new consoles expected in 2019,
Switch Pros,
right? Apart from that.
Aside from
a
that.
A discless Xbox, which is Rishi's dream console.
I will throw you away. No.
Or should I say his dream hack console?
All right.
No,
so
I think
you know, maybe 2019 will be the year when Mike finally finishes Sunset Overdrive.
Debatable. And I really don't think that'll happen.
Even though he owns some 6 or 10 copies.
More than that by now. But hopefully 2019 is the year they actually do the Xbox One X patch for it. Because like, come on, you brought it to PC. Bring it to the people who actually paid full price for the game.
Yeah. And even more than that, I hope we actually see Ghost of Tsushima and hopefully see Last of Us 2 get a release date. And hopefully
yeah, so
see
Ghost of Tsushima,
Death Stranding.
If
so, yeah.
Ghost of Tsushima is out in 2019, I will play
it's
it
not.
In 2019.
It's not.
It's like, not going to come out. Though.
I think what's going to happen with Sony at least is they're skipping E3 first, which is like whatever. But I think they are going to announce a release date for Last of Us 2, which will be probably winter 2019 before it gets delayed to early 2020. I think that'll happen. Ghost of Tsushima, I think, is too far
I really don't think they'd like put that.
I think Last of Us, like a lot of people are speculating that these are cross-gen or whatever, but it remains to be seen how Sony is handling that because Microsoft has said whatever games you buy now will work future-proof and all that, so you can safely start buying digital stuff on Xbox if you please. I'd still say buy physical because whatever, it's better. But I doubt Death Stranding also. Whatever it is, like, Kojima should just post a new trailer. So, like, his music choices are at least good. That's all. I don't really care about the game anymore. But, that's going to be a thing. It's also too soon for any of these Microsoft Studio acquisitions to, like, show any fruits or whatever, I'd
say.
Yeah,
it's going
to
take probably a couple of years.
So, like, good they bought them and all. But, Animal Crossing, definitely on Switch. Other than that, looking forward to Fire Emblem Three Houses. Hopefully, that'll be the Fire Emblem game Rishi actually plays to completion.
Hopefully.
Yeah, Bayonetta 3, I doubt it's coming next year. I doubt Metroid Prime 4 is also showing up. Hopefully Nintendo actually like pads in the gaps again with some Wii U ports because the games they've left now are actually like, you know, the
Tokyo
ones which
Mirage
are...
Sessions,
yeah,
please.
Xenoblade X, Super Mario Maker, stuff like that. You know, the ones which people will actually are okay paying full price for, unlike new Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe, which is coming out in like 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah, and even that Super Mario Party and...
wasn't a port though. That was technically a new game. But like Donkey Kong, basically really good game, but not full price.
And
not
then,
worth full
and
price.
Even,
come on, this is a company that charged full price for that crappy 1-2 Switch thing or whatever. That should have been a free...
That should have been a pack-in game.
And, I mean, what else? I mean, also looking to see what Game Freak does with its new non-Pokemon RPG. Though,
and the new Pokemon RPG.
That too. So it's going to be an interesting year for all platform owners. So it's going to be fun. I mean, the only... and particularly going to be most fun for PC... simply because you'll have multiple stores to choose from. And I do believe, and sure, yeah, I mean, you have that section of the audience that's going to say that this is messed up. But I look at it this way. It means eventually everyone's going to be competing for your money and you're going to have the best rates. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah, not India pricing though.
No, I think it's
US pricing.
I think that's also going to happen eventually. You're going to see them trying to cut themselves to make sure that people go to X store instead of Y store.
But then the thing is, regional pricing is great. A lot of people who used to pirate probably started buying because regional pricing is so good. But then a lot of publishers have moved away from it. We've spoken about this at length. Like Capcom games in a lot of cases are most expensive on PC. They're more expensive on PC than they are on Xbox and PS4 in India. Bandai Namco throws a dart on a dartboard to decide whether a game gets regional pricing or not. Because Ni No Kuni 2 was more expensive on PC by 20% than it was on console. So it really depends on that. Like a lot of indie developers do regional pricing. Some Japanese developers do. Like Arc System Works fighting games are dirt cheap in India on PC. So, but then you get what you pay for in terms of online community. Because I remember Blazbrook Cross Tag Battle. People had a ton of trouble finding games in India on PC.
True.
But on Switch and PS4, I tried both of them. It's like you could get games immediately. A friend of mine just bought Soul Calibur 6 and he had a hard time finding people playing on PC online while... even on Xbox in India, at least, I'm finding a lot of people online. So, that's something to keep in mind. I don't think Epic Games is going to look at regional pricing. It's probably a low priority for them. But what they do need to fix is, have a forum, have feedback options for customers, have improve your refund options and stuff like that. Because, getting devs out of Steam is, well and good for you. But customers need something to actually put money into the platform because there's no shortage of games to play on any storefront, I'd say.
Yeah,
and the Steam winter sale's on right now. People are just buying random nonsense which they're not going to play. So you need to get people interested in your thing. And I don't see the Fortnite crowd ready to try out a small percentage will, but you can't just assume that crowd is going to convert to buying these other games.
Yeah, Yakuza 0 should go to the Epic Games Store.
Maybe Yakuza Kiwami on PC is gone MIA because it's going to show up over there. That'll be the funniest thing ever.
I don't know.
But I don't think that's happening.
I think at the end of the day, it's going to be fun to see where it all goes down. I kind of believe that at least it might be a bit of a flux situation for PC gamers. But it will get better down the line.
Then. So I think that's all we have for this episode of Transition. Before we go, I'll make a couple of bold predictions. 2019 is the year when I will finish Yakuza Kiwami. 1 and Persona 5. So there you go. At the end of 2020, if we are still around, if this podcast is still around, if the world is still around, maybe you can come back and check whether that actually happened. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Olai Paulsen, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Now, if you listen to us via any of these fancy podcast apps such as Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, please rate our show, please review us, please subscribe to this. These things, they help us a lot. Once again, from the entire Gadgets 360 team, you have a happy new year and come back, join us next year.